Good evening. Am I on? Just double check. Got a green light. Should be on. Okay. I'm very impressed. No one got up and left. When he slid that announcement in this morning that I was going to be preaching tonight, I fully expected half house, but I'm really thankful for the opportunity. It's great to be here. I've been told a couple jokes to say about leaders and followers. You know, me and Bailey got married 2 weeks ago. Very, very thankful for that. And, you know, you think leaders and followers, you think husbands and wives, and I won't say his name, but someone told me to say that I obviously don't need any practice, right? 2 weeks in, I'm already perfect at this, so I don't need any practice. But this lesson's one for all of us. It doesn't really matter what situation you're in life. There's always going to be leaders and followers. It's good to be here this evening. It's good to sing praises to God. I appreciate Eric. He texted me what the topic was, and he picked some fantastic songs. And funny enough, the invitation song is one that I mentioned. I didn't even tell him about that, but he did a really good job. We're truly blessed to have God in our lives and to have Jesus as our leader. He's the greatest leader of all time. Tonight we're going to be thinking about leadership, not just the fact that Jesus is our leader, but some general ideas, some general concepts that go along with leadership and followership along with it. Mostly about leadership, but we'll think about some key ideas for followers as well. I've been thinking a lot about leadership, you know, in the last year. I started back to school. I'm working on my master's degree, and I'm in my graduate program. The first class I took was called Influential Leadership. Influential leadership, pretty much the main concepts, you know, the ins and outs of everyday professional leaders, right? Everyday life, professional leaders, whatever it is, learning about the ins and outs of leadership. And then, of course, like I said, getting married, it kind of changes your perspective, right? You study for a long time, you get nervous leading up to it, but it's something that's really, really important for everybody, leaders and followers in every single situation. We need to strive in everything we do to have excellence in our lives. That's what the Bible tells us to do. We had our theme last year here at Eastside, so we've thought a lot about it last year, about excellence in our lives in every single aspect. In our lives, as we go along, we are to be excellent servants of God. Let our light shine so that He can be glorified. We sing some great songs about that. In our lives, we need to be excellent leaders so we can also inspire other excellent followers as well for God. I want you to think about this with me for a second. At some point in your life, some relationship in your life, you're going to be a leader. Whether maybe you're the CEO of a company or some high-up leader, some manager at your company. Maybe you're the general of an army, right? You have a lot of people under your command. Or maybe it's someday you just need to simply step up and do the right thing, even when that right thing might not be very easy. I use this example in one of our, you know, they call them discussion boards, but one of those things that we had to do in our class where everybody talks about one example of leadership in your everyday life. It's kind of a cheesy example, but go with me for a second. Think about you're going to the grocery store. Okay, everybody shops, everybody needs their groceries, we have to eat, right? You're going to the grocery store, and you're going, maybe it's the baking aisle, right? Think about something that tempts you, right, that you don't need. For me, it's chocolate chips. I'll snack on chocolate chips all day long. I love chocolate chips. So you're going to the baking aisle, or maybe it's potato chips or cookies, whatever it is. You go through the grocery store, and you see them, and you know you don't need them, but it's a thought, well, I guess, yeah, they look really good. I'm going to put them in my cart, right? We've all been there. We've all done that. Put them in your cart, you keep shopping. You get the rest of your list, you keep going, you go with everything, and finally, you get the last thing, right? You got toothpaste. So think about Walmart, right? Can anybody visualize Walmart? You got the baking cookies and everything over here, and then you got the toothpaste way over here, completely other side of the store. Think about that temptation, the chocolate chips for me. I'm looking at the toothpaste, I'm like, well, I guess I really don't need these chocolate chips, right? All I'm going to do is snack on them. All I'm going to do is, you know, just eat them. I'm trying to lose some weight. Maybe they're not good for me. I need to put them back. The decision comes here. Do you decide to put them right there in the middle of the toothpaste aisle where it doesn't go completely across the store, or do you decide to go and put them back where they need to? And like I said, it's kind of a cheesy example, but we're going to draw some applications from it. One definition for the word lead. I love this definition. This definition is to set an example or to be the precedent. I think it works well with this example because think about if some child, some little kid is sitting there watching the toothpaste aisle, right? You put those chocolate chips, put those cookies right there in the middle of the toothpaste. What precedent are you setting for that child? Are you teaching them to put things back where they go? Or are you teaching them that, oh, it's easy enough, I'll throw it here, I don't need it, and move on, right? You make it a bad example for that child, and you make it harder for the worker who has to pick it up and go put it back in the right place to start with. I love that definition. How do you think your actions are being seen by others? In our lives, how do we think our actions are being seen by others? If someone was looking at your actions in your everyday life, random Tuesday, right? Sundays I go to church twice, Wednesday nights, midweek Bible study, I'm good. but on a random Tuesday, a random Friday, how would someone see your actions? What would they think? What do you think they'd say? Do you think they'd see someone having a great example and following your footsteps, serving God the right way? Or do you think they could be seeing something done better? Or maybe seeing something that might not need to be being done at all? Almost everything in life we do as humans requires leadership of some kind. Whether it's in the home, and it's the husband being the leader for the wife, or maybe the parents, the mother, the father for the children. Whether it's at work, whether you're the boss or you're the employee, you have that boss-employee relationship. Maybe it's your team, right? You have your ball players, you're the coach, the players, the player to the coach. Every situation, whatever you're in, there's leadership, followership in some way. Great leadership is very, very important, right? It's very important. It sets a good precedence. In the church with our elders especially, in the homes with our husbands, our fathers, our mothers, but just as important as having great leadership, having great followership. If you have great leadership, that's great, but even if you have bad followership, great leadership doesn't really make that much of a difference. God has put in place leaders in everyday life, right? He has leaders set up in our government, in our society, in our workplaces, in our homes, and especially even the church. Right now as a country, whether your opinions or views, whatever, however they are, we're kind of worried about, you know, the way our country is being taken, or the direction it's going. There's some decisions in the White House that could either really, really hurt our economy or really, really help our economy. As important as it is, you know, I wake up scared to look at the stock market because of the decisions that are being made, right? But as important as those decisions are, as important as who our president is, they're not really as important as the leaders in our homes and leaders in the church, right? A lot of what I learned in class is that there are so many different styles of leadership, right? A lot of things you know just from everyday life, but styles of leadership is something that I took home. It changes from person to person, right? I could go and I could pick out five people in this auditorium, and all five of those people would probably give me different opinions, different concepts and ideas that are important to them as good leaders. One thing I know for certain, it doesn't matter. While there's all these different styles of opinion and opinions on leadership and the president, whatever it is, I know this for certain. I know that Jesus Christ is the greatest leader we've ever had. I know that he's the greatest leader we're ever going to see. We need to be like him in everything that we do. Tonight we're going to be thinking about a couple different qualities and thoughts on leaderships and, you know, different things. And what I want you to do is really just try to imagine yourself in these situations, right? Not everybody in here has the same situations. Not everybody has the same lifestyle. So take the thoughts that we're going to have tonight and apply them to your life specifically. That's what I need you to do tonight. Think about the Old Testament with me. The Old Testament. In Bible times, God appointed patriarchs and fathers to lead their families and their nations. One of the first ones we come to, one of the main leaders we think about when it comes in the Bible, for me, is Abraham. One of the first ones in the Bible. Abraham, Genesis 18, verse 19 says this. I'm gonna preface with this. There's a lot of passages, so I absolutely follow along, but we're going to be going kind of fast tonight. Genesis 18, verse 19 says, "For I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring Abraham what he has spoken to him." God's saying here, I need him to be a leader. I need him to take his family, direct his family in the way that leads him to me. They need to be a leader for his family, his children, and his nation following after him. Later in the Bible, we get to Moses, we get to the kings, the priests, the judges, all sorts of different people who God has put in charge of his people. At times, they were successful. They followed God the right way. They did what he said to do, and we see great leaders. We have a lot of examples of those. But we also have a lot of examples of people who did not do what God said, who led the people in the wrong way, and we see that they did not turn out very well in the end. The quality of leadership has a direct impact on the spiritual quality of the followers. That's kind of a deep thought, so I'm going to say it again. Think about it with me. The quality of the leadership had a direct impact on the spiritual quality of the people. That's still true today. If we have bad elders, we have bad husbands, we have bad fathers that lead the families, lead the congregation in the wrong path, we're going to have bad spiritual outcomes in the end. Fathers, mothers, are we doing the right thing to raise your kids the right way? Husbands, are we doing the right thing to to lead our wives in the way that are going to lead to God? Excellent leadership inspires excellent followership. Just because leaders inspire followers doesn't mean that every time you have great leaders, you're going to have great followers. We have a great example of that, and that was when Jesus was the leader, he was inspiring others, but he had a follower named Judas, right? We remember Judas. He decided to not follow Jesus, turned him in, bad situation. Good leadership does not guarantee good followership, but it does inspire and give you a lot better of a chance when you have the leaders you're supposed to have. Throughout Scripture, leaders are often compared to shepherds. Shepherds and leaders, I think, are a great comparison. There's a lot of concepts you can draw. The concept of leaders being shepherds is used literally hundreds of times in the Bible. Sheep aren't the smartest of animals, right? They need help. They need guidance. That's why shepherds are such a good example of leaders. Like I said, the Bible uses examples. One of the greatest examples is the Lord, right? Psalm 23. The first verse in Psalm 23, very, very popular verse, it says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." There's a lot of things we can get from that verse. What do we learn from leadership? Leader is someone who takes care of those who are in his charge. They'll see to their needs, their real needs, their spiritual needs. That's what a shepherd does. They'll show us where we need to go. They'll show us what we need to do, how to help us and how we get there. That's what a shepherd does. That's what a leader does. They bring peace to our lives. They give us safety. That's what a leader does. That's what the Lord does for us. A shepherd's someone who is willing to give their life for the sheep. Jesus is the best example of this, right? Jesus sacrificed himself for us. He's the good shepherd. He tells us in John 10, verse 11, he says, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep." Jesus sacrificed himself, all of himself, for a sheep, for us, for everybody, so that we can have a way to get to heaven. Think about the husband in the home. Husbands, are we willing to do everything it takes, lay down our lives, everything, all of our wants, all of our desires, put them away so that we can lead our wives, our children, to God? Lead them to where we can have that home in heaven with him. Elders, are we willing to do everything we can, put our desires away so we can lead the congregation? That's 250 souls that you're in charge of. Lead them in the way that lead to God. Look to God in everything that we do. It's the nature, devotion, and commitment of a shepherd to do this. It's our responsibility. The apostles were given this task. They were meant to be shepherds. John 21, this is a very powerful passage. You can flip there. We're not going to read it verse by verse, but we're going to talk about the concepts of it. Give a little context. This is where Jesus, you know, is trying to talk to Peter about how much he really means to him and how he's getting him ready for Jesus to leave this world. John 21, starting in verse 15, Jesus was talking to Peter about, you know, being his apostle, what that really meant, what Peter needed to do for the Lord. Three times in that context, Jesus asked Peter, "Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me?" And Peter tells Jesus, "Yes, Lord, I love you." He asked Peter again, "Peter, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord, I love you." The third time, Peter, he's confused. He doesn't know what's going on. "Yes, Lord, you know me. You know I love you." In that context, he tells him three things. He tells him to feed my flock, tend my sheep, and take care of my lambs. That's pretty powerful, right? That's a pretty powerful thought. What's that mean? He's telling Peter, you have to be a leader. You have to step up. There's people that are counting on you, looking to you. You have to be a shepherd for these people. You have a responsibility to take care of and guide these people, everybody. Today, in the church today, elders are meant to be our shepherds, meant to be our leaders. 1 Peter 5. 1 Peter 5 is two very, very important verses in today's society. 1 Peter 5, starting in verse 1, says this, "The elders who are among you, I exhort. I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God, which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly." Shepherds are devoted. Shepherds are caring. They don't just do it for the title. They don't do it for the power. But they do it because they truly care for the church. They care for their flock. They care for the people, everybody who's in their church. As shepherds go, so go the sheep. I mean, that's true almost everywhere we go, right? Don't even think about it in a spiritual context. Think about it in everyday life, right? You have the CEO of a company. You have the president of a company. If they made this decision for the company to go in this direction, what are we really going to do about it, right? If the CEO wants this to happen, guess what? He's the CEO. That's the decision that has to be made. That's the decision that she wants to be made, he or she. If you're in the army, you have someone over you, you get told what to do. That's what you have to do. That's the decision being made. You might not like it, but good or bad decision, they're in charge. That's what has to be done. So where the shepherd go, where the leaders go, so go the followers. Husbands, if we're loving our lives the right way, are we going to lead them to heaven? Are we going to take them down the path that leads to God in the end, or are we going to go the way of the world? Fathers, mothers, parents, are you going to lead your kids to where they can have a godly life, a good upbringing? We had a great lesson this morning about thinking about Moses and the way he had his life come up. I really, really liked that lesson. I think it applies well. Ezekiel 34. Ezekiel is in captivity in Babylon. Thousands of other Israelites are there in captivity. They've been led there by the Babylonians who took them captive. Their city was destroyed. The temple was gone. It was in ruins. They're there in captivity, and they're kind of wondering, how did all of this happen? How did we get here? God took this opportunity in Ezekiel 34 to explain to them kind of how they got there. We're going to look at one verse in particular. Ezekiel 34, verse 2 says this, "Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel, prophesy and say to them, thus says the Lord God to the shepherds, woe to the shepherds of Israel who feed themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flocks?" The shepherds' first problem was that they were caring about themselves. Shepherds' responsibilities are for their flock. It's fundamental for shepherds to care for their flock. It's their job to look after and care for them. How did Israel end up basically wiped off the face of the planet? Almost wiped away completely and taken away as a country as a whole because of bad leadership. Bad shepherds. They cared for themselves. They ruled with cruelty, ruled with force, tried to control every single little thing instead of looking to God. God controls everything. He tells us how we need to live our lives. Our standard is the Bible. That's how we live our lives today. Here's one thing we need to know. Whether it's in the home, whether it's in the church, it's at our jobs, the workforce, our sports teams, our clubs, whatever situation, wherever you want to put it, this is what we need to know. Luke 6, verse 39 says this, "If the blind lead the blind, they'll both end up in a ditch." If we have bad leadership leading the ones who don't know any better, then they're both going to end up in a bad place. It's a responsibility of the leader to take on, and it's a very heavy responsibility. Their health, their livelihood, spiritual quality, everything depends on you. Whether it's husbands in the homes for the wife, parents for the kids, everything depends on you, elders for the flock. Everything is on your shoulders. That's the decisions you have to make because their spiritual quality, that depends on you. We know leadership is very important. We see a lot of examples of leadership in the Bible, and we see it out throughout our lives. So thinking about leadership, how do good leaders lead, right? How do good leaders who do good at their job, how do they lead? First and foremost, I think leaders lead by example, right? We see in our lives, good leaders lead by example. We all know the saying that actions speak louder than words. We can see how somebody is by their actions, by what they're choosing to do. Jesus tells us in Matthew that we're going to know people by their fruit. We can know someone if they're truly a leader by how they act. Jesus was the perfect example. Jesus led by example. 1 Peter 2, verse 21 says this, "For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps." How more plain and simple could it be? Our example, our standard is Jesus. What he did, that's what we're supposed to do. He led by example. Jesus came to show us how to live our lives. The apostles led by example. They were told to. Paul says in Philippians 3, verse 17, "Brethren, join in following my example, and note those who so walk as you have us for a pattern." He looked at Jesus, he looked at God, knew how he was supposed to live his life, so we see them as an example. Paul also told the Thessalonians to follow their example. 2 Thessalonians 3, starting in verse 7, For you yourselves know how you ought to follow us. For we were not disorderly among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread free of charge, but worked with labor and toil night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you. Not because we did not have authority, but to make ourselves an example of how you should follow us. Paul was telling the Christians there to be more like him. He said, I'm not going to be a freeloader. Could I? Yes. But I'm doing what I am to be an example to you, so you can follow us as we follow Christ. Elders need to be our examples. Elders should lead by example. We already looked at the passage in 1 Peter 5, the first two verses there, about the elders, you know, and the church needing to be examples for the flock. We need to be able to look up to our elders for guidance, for help. That's very important. To have a good leader to be able to look up to is so important. Think about if you went to talk to one of the elders, right? We're very, very blessed to have good leadership here. But think if you went to one of the elders and you just went to their house on a random Friday night and you saw things in their house that they shouldn't be having there, or they're watching things on their TV, or they're making choices they shouldn't be making. What kind of message does that send to you? If you're going to the ones who're supposed to be leading the flock and they're making these bad choices, then what kind of message does that send to you? What kind of message does that send the whole flock if it gets out that they're not living their lives the right way? Elders should lead by example. All Christians should lead by examples. We all have a duty, a responsibility to lead by example. What do I mean by that? It does not matter if you are 20, if you are 50, or if you are 85. We all have a responsibility to lead by example. Doesn't matter if you're male or if you're female. Every single person, every single Christian has a responsibility to lead by example. 1 Timothy 4, verse 12. 1 Timothy 4, verse 12. Paul was talking to his young mentee, Timothy, and he said this: "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity." It doesn't matter our age. If we know the truth, we should lead by example. How we live our lives should be a light to others. Paul's talking to a young preacher, Timothy, here, so we can take Paul's example and put it to all of our preachers, all of our teachers. Everybody should be living like this. I think it's very important to note, me personally, whenever I think about letting our light shine so that God can be glorified, I think about out in the world, right? I think about to the non-believers. If they can see the way I'm living my life, hopefully they see I'm a godly man. They see I don't say the things that others say. They see I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't vape. They can see that I'm a godly person, I hope, and I pray. I think one thing that's very important is look back in verse 12. Let's read verse 12 again. "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity." I don't care how old you are, I don't care what your age is, anything like that. If we are following God, living our lives so that He can be glorified, we're being an example to the non-believers and to everybody in this room. I don't care who you are, how old you are. If you're living your life the right way, I can look at you and I can be edified. I can be a good example to you, you can be a good example to me. That's how it's supposed to work. I'm up here preaching tonight. I in no way consider myself to be a preacher, not even close to it. But one thing that we see about people who get up publicly in church is that people look up to them, right? If you're going to be into the public services, you're going to have people look up to you. You're all physically looking up to me right now, but that's not really what I'm talking about. You have people look up to you. You have the younger Christians who are going to look up to you. You have the people that look to your example. I've preached from time to time at different congregations, and me and Bailey have talked about this multiple times. Every time that I preach a sermon, I get terrified, right? A lot of people, when they get up to preach, they get up in front of people, they have stage fright. That's a very real thing, and thankfully I've been blessed. I'm not really a big stage fright person. The thing that I get so nervous about, so scared about, is that I am leading study of God's word for everyone, right? Everyone is looking to the things that I'm saying. I hope and pray. I really appreciate the prayer that Todd had. A phrase that was in there that said, "If it was true, let us live that in our lives." And that's important anytime, right? If everything that we're talking about is true, that's how we need to live our lives. I get really nervous about leading publicly because that's a lot of people that are looking up to you, right? What if I say the wrong passage? What if I mix up my words? I'm bad about mixing up my words. What if I mix up my words and I say the wrong thing and I might confuse somebody, or I might say the wrong thing and not really mean what I meant to say and it was taken the wrong way? Leadership in the church is something we tend to think of. We think of the elders, right? We think of elders, we think of song leaders, preachers. A big group that gets left out is the women in the church. We all know that women are not allowed to have a public leading role, right? They're not allowed to get up here and have song leading or preaching. We understand that. But that does not mean they don't have a responsibility to lead. I want everybody to turn to Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2, let's look at that. The first five verses there. Titus chapter 2, we'll start in verse 1. "But as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine, that the older men may be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, in patience. The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed." Titus is saying here that he doesn't care if you're an old man. I don't care if you're an old man, a young man, an old woman, or a young woman. We all have a responsibility in these five verses. We all have a role. The older women are told to teach, teachers of good things, admonish the young women of these list of things, right? Everybody has a responsibility. Teach Bible classes. Pray with others. Study the Bible with others. We all have ways we can lead. Male and female, young and old, we all have different roles and responsibilities that we can do. Whether, you know, it's listen to our elders, learn from them, look to their example as long as it's true and follow in their footsteps. Or maybe live our lives in a way that others can look to us. Right? We have great examples of older Christians who have been fighting the fight for a long time. I love to think of all of the older Christians as maybe grandparents, right? Grandfathers, grandmothers, to the younger Christians. Someone you can always go up and ask them, look, how do I do this? How'd you do it when you were my age? How can I get through this? That's the roles. That's the things that we need to strive to have. We know that leaders lead by example, right? Leaders lead by example. Leaders also are meek and humble. Meek and humble in everything they do. Jesus tells us in Matthew chapter 11, verse 29, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Jesus was meek and humble. We look to him. He's our standard. That's what we need to do. We need to be meek and humble just like him. Elders today have to be meek and humble. 1 Timothy 3 is the kind of the qualifications for elders. 1 Timothy 3, starting in verse 3, we'll look at 3 and 6. 1 Timothy 3:3 says, not given to much wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous. Drop down to verse 6. Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. I've studied these passages a lot, and one thing that hit me when I was getting ready for this sermon was that the end of verse 6, we think about, you know, meek and humble. You think about leaders who are not meek and humble. Those leaders get puffed up, they make decisions, think they can't be wrong, and so whatever decision they make has to be right. If we have an elder like that, look at the end of verse 6. If they get puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Think how powerful that is. That's how important it is that our leaders, our shepherds, have to be meek and humble in every situation. One example, if I think of an example in the Bible of a man who started out meek and humble and then let his pride get in the way, my head automatically goes to King Saul. King Saul once was this great king over Israel. He was the first king they ever had. God handpicked him. And as time went on, a lot of us know the story of Saul. He continued to go further and further away from God, right? In 1 Samuel 8, they say, we want a king. Saul's anointed. And then by 1 Samuel 15, verse 17, this is kind of his last straw, right? Saul really messed up this time. This is his last straw. And we see in 1 Samuel 15, verse 17, it says this. When you were little in your own eyes, were you not the head of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Samuel's telling him, when you didn't have this big head, when you didn't think you knew better than God himself, that's when you were a great king. You were king over Israel. He appointed you king over Israel when you were humble. And because of that, he lost his kingdom. He lost his kingdom for his family. He lost his kingdom for himself. What was once a great king let pride get in his way. We see it with King Saul, and we see it a lot of other times in the Bible, and we see it today so many times as well. Pride is a cancer. Pride is a cancer that we have to get out of our body. Luke 14, verse 11 says this, for whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. I love the song, humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, right? Everything we do, put God first, put others first. Humble ourselves so that we can have a good life. We know that leaders lead by example. We see that leaders are meek and humble. Now we know that leaders are servants. Leaders are servants. Again, I'm going to start with Jesus. He was the greatest example of a leader. Luke 22. The context of this verse is when Jesus is... Let's just flip over there. Luke 22. Ooh, I got a tickle in my throat. Luke 22, starting in verse 25. He said to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. But not so among you. On the contrary, he who is the greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who governs as he who serves. For who is greater, he who sits at the table or who serves? It is not who sits, is it not who sits at the table? Yet I am among you as the one who serves. Think about that in today's society, right? You have the CEO, the president of the company. What do they have? They have multiple assistants, right? We have the general in an army. They have multiple people under them. Jesus was God. He is God, right? He is the greatest example of someone who had all the authority, all the power, but he's telling us here to be like me. I am one among you who serves. If Jesus was a servant, then why do we think we shouldn't be a servant also? He tells the apostles to be servants. John 13 is one of the greatest, to me, one of my favorite stories in the Bible. Right? I love this story. John 13, context, first 20 verses is talking about when Jesus washes the disciples' feet. Back then, washing people's feet was a sign of a lowly servant. Right? You got to think about back then, they were walking everywhere. They had open-toed shoes, these sandals, so their feet were dirty, disgusting, nasty. I would not want to be the one to wash people's feet in a house. But when someone washed your feet, that was a sign that they were being a servant to you. They were doing you a service. It was a job for the lowest person in the house. Jesus goes and he washes every single one of their feet. He washes all of their feet, and then in verse 15, he tells them they need to follow his example. Us today, we as Jesus' disciples today, we're supposed to wash people's feet. I'm not telling you go wash people's feet on the side of the road, but I am telling you we need to love God enough to serve others. Do what we can do to be like Jesus. Help others however we can. Do what we can do to wash their feet today. That's what Jesus told the apostles to do. That's what we're supposed to do. Leaders speak in truth and love, right? They're examples, they're meek and humble, they're servants, and they speak in truth and love. This is one that can sometimes get overlooked. I think this one is very, very important. Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4 is talking about the unity in the church, the body of Christ. Ephesians 4, we get to verse 15 and it says this, "But speaking the truth in love may grow up in all things into him who is the head, Christ." To me, I think we can read that verse and we can say, okay, if I speak the truth in love, if I speak the truth, I do it from the right place, from the right part of my heart, that's going to lead to God. That's going to lead to Christ. If we continue down that path, those are godly things that are going to happen. In whatever situation we're in whatever relationship we're in, whether leader, follower, there has to be love. And there has to be truth. We can't just lie to someone to not hurt their feelings. They deserve the truth. We're told to tell them the truth. We see a lot of times people fib or they lie just to not hurt their feelings that much. Everything we say has to be done with truth and love. Saying what needs to be said, but saying it plainly from a place of love and care, from the right place in your heart with the right motivation. When leaders speak, they need to speak openly and with a clear heart. I heard this quote one time. I really liked it, and I think it applies well to this sermon. It says, "Truth is hard unless it's softened by love, and love is soft unless it's hardened by truth." Think about that, right? And we know the saying, the truth hurts sometimes, right? Sometimes if I tell you something, it's not going to be the easiest thing for you to hear. But if I tell you with love in my heart from the right place, that's what matters. Is it going to make it easier to hear? Hopefully. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But the fact that I'm telling you the truth in love is what matters. We as leaders, examples, Christians, have to make a constant effort to make sure we are speaking and doing things from the right place in our hearts. In life, bad things are going to happen, right? We're going to be stressed out, upset, maybe angry, sad, hurt, jealous. So many of these emotions can fit into these things where we're going to have a bad attitude or an upset attitude. It's during those times we have to work so much harder to control our speech. Make sure we're speaking in truth and love to set the right examples. Husbands, right? You come home from work, or maybe you work from home, maybe whatever, the work day is over. Wives, the work day is over. You get home and you're worn out, right? It was such a long day, things happened that you couldn't control, you got upset, and just you're worn out, you're tired. Sometimes things might get said that probably either don't need to be said or could have been said a whole lot different. We have to make sure we take control in those moments. Parents, fathers, mothers, don't take your anger out on your kids, right? Sometimes you get in financial problems. Sometimes you have big decisions. You get stressed out, whatever it is. Don't take your anger out on your kids, right? Place it in the place it needs to stay. Have love and have truth in your heart in everything we do in all of our leadership. As humans, it's natural for us to be upset, lash out, maybe say things. You know, if we get our feelings hurt, we get upset, we're stressed out, whatever it is, We cannot let our emotions take over. Think about if one of the elders got up here to make announcements. They're really stressed out about something, and they just lashed out at somebody. Is that going to be taken the right way? They need to speak in truth and love in everything they do. Not just because God tells us to, but because we should love our children, our flock, our spouses, our parents. Love them enough to give them that respect. Love them enough to speak in truth and love instead of lashing out at them. We've talked a lot about leadership. I promise we're almost done. I've talked for a long time. We're almost done. We're going to close with these thoughts about followers. Excellent followers understand the following. They understand these things about leaders. Leaders deserve a couple things from followers themselves. Leaders deserve submission, compliance, and cooperation. Compliance and cooperation go hand in hand, right? We talk about kids, right? I know this was my situation a lot. My parents told me to do something. I really didn't want to do it. Mom's favorite saying to me as a kid was, suck it up, buttercup, right? She loved telling me that because sometimes there's things in life that we're just going to have to do because someone else is in charge of us. Hebrews 13, verse 7 says this, remember those who rule over you, who have spoken the word of God to you, whose faith follow, considering the outcome of their conduct. That's a really, really important verse, a very powerful verse. Those who lead you, look after you, taught you about God and His word, follow their faith. Follow their footsteps. Listen to them, follow their footsteps. Two things about this verse. One, leaders need to lead well, because people are going to be looking up to you. Whether you like it or not, if you're in a leadership role, people are looking to you. So do your job the right way. Two, followers need to look up to their leaders. Hold them in a very high place. Consider what they've taught you. Compare it to God's word. If it's truth, live it in your life. If it's truth, if it's how God would have us live our lives according to His word, make sure it's true. Follow the pattern. Make sure they're living their life the right way. Follow the pattern. The final point tonight is that leaders deserve respect. Leaders deserve respect. 1 Timothy 5:17 says, let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in word and doctrine. Those in leadership roles who rule well and rule well, very, very good at their job, good leaders we see, give them credit where credit's due. Right, they work hard. Leadership's not an easy thing. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of decisions you have to make. Leadership is not easy, but give them where credit's due. Give them respect that they deserve. That was a lot in a little bit of time, a lot about leadership, a little bit about followership, and I really, really appreciate the opportunity to get up and speak for you tonight. I appreciate the good attention. It was a long sermon, but it's almost done. In closing, fundamentally, what it is to be a Christian is to be a follower, right? That makes common sense. Jesus, when he was preaching to the people and to the Gospels, when we read in the four Gospels, he said his invitation was this, follow me. Deny yourself. Take up your cross. Follow me. Fundamentally, as a Christian, it's our job to follow the greatest leader that we have ever seen, that's ever lived. That concept needs to be our guiding light. It's got to be ingrained in us, right? To follow God. Live our lives. There's leaders and there's followers that God has set up. But overall, first and foremost, God is our leader. He's given us how we need to live our lives. Every Christian should understand that since we follow Jesus in everything we do. Now, the question tonight is, after everything we've talked about, who will follow Jesus? Who's going to make your life right that we can follow Jesus in everything we do? If anyone needs help in any way, whether it's prayer to the saints or baptized or whatever it is, however we can make your life right, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.